It's time for What's Up with Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern.
Morena, Prime Minister, how are you?
Morena, not too bad, thank you.
No, it's good to have you on the show. We've got some big things to talk about today. Let's start with last week's announcement from the government around this decision to restrict the public sector wage increases. Now, this has been quite contentious. Yesterday, we saw some crisis meetings between government ministers and the Council of Trade Unions and the PSA. Broadly, this announcement of these pay restrictions has been criticised as a policy failure. Why is the government targeting the public sector?
Well, just a couple of things. I mean, what was released last week was, you know, our guidance to chief executives in the public sector when going into pay negotiations. And so one of the things absolutely we acknowledge is that, you know, some of what will and won't happen as a result of that guidance, we should have put greater emphasis on. I mean, we already have, of course, collective agreements in place that we've already negotiated that do include wage increases. None of that changes. Of course, for many sectors, they have a pay band system. People will continue to move through those, which means, of course, they will continue to receive wage increases. None of that is affected. What we've done, though, is just acknowledge in this pay guidance as we go into negotiations that we need to achieve two things. Firstly, we need to do better at lifting those who are in the bottom quarter of wages in the public sector, which represents about a quarter. And a quarter earning under $60,000. So we want to see a lift there. We've seen then, up through the middle band, we're expecting adjustment in that area. But in the 100,000 and over, in these times where we have to acknowledge COVID and its management of it and keeping people safe, it does mean that we're fiscally, it's a tough spot for New Zealand. So we're expecting to see a hold there in those bands. But as I say, that's our guidance. The negotiations. Now we get to the table.
Now, I think some of the frustration has been around perhaps the communication of this as well as the actual directives themselves. Oh, we're seeing
which I would share, because of course I see people getting anxious about things that aren't actually what we've said. So I totally understand that.
Well, we have seen Public Service Minister Chris Hipkins come out and say things like it's not a pay freeze, it's the opposite of austerity. Now, I mean, semantics aside, if these proposed directives do go ahead, particularly for that lower bracket between this 60,000 to 100,000, we're looking more at the 60,000 area here, that's still not a high salary. This is going to see some really detrimental effects on people's real lives. So are you not concerned this is going to incentivise people to move into the private sector?
And that's where, you know, we've shared some frustration around the way it's been characterised. It's not a wage freeze. In fact, we've seen those in the past, or at least, an expectation of those in the past. Because, again, as I say, this is our guidance for negotiations. So we're yet to get around the table in some of those talks to actually negotiate through then what the final outcomes will be, because, you know, we will continue to bargain in good faith. This is just our guidance, and it's not unusual that this occurs. Every time we go into to those rounds, of course, you see the Public Service Commission offering that guidance. And so for us, you know, again, we've been very explicit. Unlike in times like the GFC, we're not suggesting that we believe it would be right to have a blanket cover-all wage freeze, and that is not what we are doing.
But perhaps
at the same time, the area that I really am going to push back, some people, you know, you do hear people talk about, well, why don't you just, you know, roll on with what we generally see, which are 2-3% increases across the board as an acknowledgement of the increase in the cost of living and so on. That is one of the reasons, and an approach to wage negotiations, you know, 2% for someone on over $100,000 is vastly different than 2% for someone who's on 45.
But perhaps
what that does is continue to exacerbate inequality. So what we are saying is we want to have discussions about how we lift and adjust for those lower and middle bands, but we want to do it in a way that starts to address inequality in this country.
Well, perhaps this frustration stems from a surprise element as well. There seems to be a lot of surprise in terms of this being announced at all, particularly given the strong Labor mandate of this government. This feels like almost directed at that core voter base. Are you concerned about that particular rhetoric?
Yeah. No, two things I'd say there is, and again, as I've said, it's not unusual. Of course, we have an issuing of guidance for negotiations that is part of a process. That bit is not unusual. And when you say, when you reference, Labor, our values, who we are as a party, it would be remiss of me not to acknowledge then that alongside our deliberate focus on the lowest paid in our negotiations going forward, and of course the fact that despite we're in a 1 in 100 year economic crisis, we are not doing what past governments have done, which is austerity and wage freezes. We have also, in the last week, announced fair pay agreements, what I think will make the single biggest difference to our low-wage earners in New Zealand, by saying that we need to set minimum standards for sectors such as those who are working in security and cleaning and bus drivers, where we have seen a race to the bottom on wages and terms and conditions. So those are the kinds of things that you should absolutely expect a Labor government to do, and we are doing.
Just the last
one
thing.
Final thing, if I can on this, we have to remember, in the last term, we did have significant wage settlements for nurses and teachers, that some of which continue to roll through, significant in the billions. Unfortunately, COVID has disrupted many of our plans, and it's just the reality of what we're dealing with.
Just the last thing I wanted to ask you on this before we move and talk about the budget a little bit is what are your expectations for how this might affect the public the private sector, because we do know that what happens in public sector wages has a trend setting and flow on effect in the private sector. What are you expecting might be the outcome of this on that private sphere?
Well, I would continue to say, well, of course, much of that, I would say, take the lead on the outcome of negotiations. This is our guidance as we go into them. So a bit of water to flow yet. But again, I would ask the same thing that we're asking of ourselves. Despite the environment that we're operating in, we must do what we can to continue to lift the wages of those on the lowest incomes. One of the issues, and we've tried to do that by lifting the statutory minimum wage. One of the issues we've seen is, yes, the median wages continue to increase in New Zealand, but I'm the Minister for Child Poverty Reduction. It is not increasing as fast for those in the bottom quartiles. And so that's what we are seeking to change. We will not overcome inequality in this country unless we change that. So I'd really implore on the private sector to work hard with us to address that issue.
So next week, now obviously you can't tell us what's going to be in the budget, but the Minister of Finance, Grant Robertson, has said that this budget's going to be a recovery and wellbeing budget as well as a COVID budget. Now, what is a wellbeing focus going to look like for 2021? This is something that your government's talked about before in terms of budget, but how is that going to be affected by, I guess, what's been happening with COVID?
Yeah, well, this is our way of saying, as we have done all along, when you're responding to an economic situation such as the one we've got, our immediate response was, not to say, let's try and save money by cutting services. Our response was to say, now is the time to invest in our people, to try and make sure that we're supporting job creation. We have been successful at that. OECD average of unemployment is higher than what we've got at 4.7%. People thought we would get into double digits. That's not by accident. It was the wage subsidy. It's initiatives like Mana and Mahi, programs that we put in place to encourage employment and ensure people stay in jobs. And if I can, making sure that trades training was free and vocational training. We've had 100,000 people enroll since July, and a significant number of those apprentices. So that's exactly the kind of examples of what you'll see is a wellbeing approach when you're moving into a recovery from an event like this.
Now, we also have seen that the budget's going to commit up to $53 million for a cervical smear test that can be self-administered. Now, do you anticipate this is going to help reduce inequity in health outcomes for Māori women, or do we need to see more wraparound support implemented alongside this?
Oh, both, absolutely. And that's, some people have said, why is it taking 2 years to implement? The answer there is actually we transition away from a current screening regime that's very much about people accessing a medical facility and a register-style regime with callbacks, and you're moving towards instead something that can be self-administered at home, it is going to require clinical support, you know, from the beginning. You know, it's not just a case of sending out a swab to someone's house randomly without any support around that. So there's quite a bit of work to do. What we don't want to do is lose the bits of our existing program that have been successful because we haven't done the planning and work to ensure the next version is also a success.
Now, before we let you go, I did just want to talk very briefly about the big healthcare reforms that the government has announced in the last month. We're seeing a huge centralisation of the DHB system and also the establishment of an independent Māori health authority. Now, one of the concerns about the centralisation of the DHBs is perhaps we might lose those local voices and that immediate accountability and response to specific communities, rural communities or ethnic communities as well. What's going to be put in place to ensure that that doesn't happen in this moving forward?
Yeah, a good question, because actually what we're trying to solve is, at the moment, yes, we have, you know, DHBs that are intended to give that local voice, but actually what has also happened as a byproduct is we have huge variability in the types of service and health provision that you can access, and no one thinks some kind of postcode lottery with healthcare is the right thing for New Zealand. So yes, we're moving to a central Health New Zealand model, but within that we will have locality networks, so representation in local regions and areas to make sure that when we're delivering services, we have a really good understanding of the way that those communities access their services and what is going to work. But we're hoping that with a more centralised planning in the first instance, that, and then, you know, using those networks and delivery, that we are going to overcome some of the disparity we have at the moment.
And very briefly on the Māori Health Authority, are we going to see a centralised model for this as well, or are we going to have iwi and hapu specific involvement with this?
And again, we'll be looking to model and replicate that same type of approach. That yes, we have the Māori Health Authority, which is intended to alongside Health New Zealand. They will have both a commissioning function, so they themselves will be able to, as a government, certain health priorities are identified, they will have the ability to then commission services to deliver on those priorities. But they will also, because many services that Māori access are, of course, national services, they also will work alongside the New Zealand Health Authority, Health NZ, to deliver the national health plan as well. So it will be a partnership approach, but of course we will need to use local voice to inform that too.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Prime Minister. It's always great to have you on the show. Have a good rest of your week and we'll talk to you in a few weeks' time.
Thanks very much. Talk soon. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was What's Up with Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern.